This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you after a weekend which was, it was like Jekyll and Hyde. There's some good parts to it, some very good parts to it, and there were some very bad parts to it. And I suppose, as per podcast go, me and Lainey, we're going to be sitting here trying to talk about most of the good parts and most of the things that were very good about the weekend, and we'll try and avoid talking about the things that weren't so good, but we can't really do that because we have to be a little bit impartial and talk about everything.
There'd be no football talked about, would there, to be honest?
That's right. So my name is Billy Grant. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint with my man Lainey in the house. Lainey, how are you?
I'm all right, considering, yes. I got back from Newcastle somehow.
In one piece.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about our trip, won't we? Getting back was a little bit kind of around the houses, but we did it. One of those weekends I wish I'd kept football right out of football.
That's right. And we all wanted to. I think that all the 3,000 Bees fans, fair play to them, that made their way up to Newcastle. I think they all wished they kicked football out of football on Saturday, but that wasn't possible because, unfortunately, Newcastle kicked the football into Brentford's net 5 times instead. But we'll talk about that a little bit later. But just coming, just getting away from that a little bit, Lainey. There's a little bit of news that came, I think, the last 24 hours. I mean, I know that we've recently had the Queen's funeral, which was a bank holiday, and we had the day off for that. And, you know, we all paid our respects to the Queen. We paid our respects in the stadium as well, also at home and in and around with our friends. And it was a very moving moment, a very moving time. But now as we move on, now we've got the King, King Charles, who was born on the same day as myself as well. You know, you're talking about that. And he's getting crowned. The old crown coronation has been announced, isn't it? And there's a little bit of talk about that because the weekend is actually the first weekend in May. Normally, that would have actually been the bank holiday weekend, because normally the sort of kind of second Saturday in May, or the sort of the first, I think it's the first Saturday in May, is normally the sort of followed by the bank holiday weekend. It was last year, and it normally is. The only time it's not the bank holiday weekend is when the Monday is actually the 1st of May, which it is this year. So May Day is actually on the 1st of May for the first time, I think, in a while. So we've got a coronation, but the coronation's on a Saturday, the day we play Liverpool, and we've got our plans already. I mean, not that we plan our lives ahead of us, but we have done that. And this may scupper, you know, us and a lot of football fans. But this is not a disrespect on, you know, King Charles or anything like that. We're just making a point that all of a sudden things may change for us and everybody that weekend, isn't it, Lainey?
Yeah, it's a big one, isn't it? Liverpool away. Obviously, the coronation is a big thing as well. So it will be perfect if it happened on a bank holiday, I would suggest, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. The other thing that has not been confirmed yet is what what the new coronation dish is going to be, Bill, because last coronation we had coronation chicken was
Yes.
invented,
Yes.
and this time there's not even been any talk about what which is it, coronation beef, or are we going to have a vegetable? I don't
Yeah,
know, Bill. These questions need answering, mate.
these questions do need answering. They are a little bit late. They have been a little late in all the things regal in the past year or past year or two. I mean, they were late in announcing sort of the date of certain things, which kind of had people on tenterhooks. And maybe, maybe they've got a bigger committee or something like that. Maybe they've got the Supreme Committee, within the regal household that actually decides these things. And that's why it takes a little bit longer.
Yeah, perhaps. So we do we get a say in that?
Well, we
Is
don't as
something?
yet because we haven't formed the Supreme Committee as yet, but we're still
Well,
working on it.
I want to. Can we be put down for doing the naming the coronation vegetable, please?
Yes. Well, we will do. We'll put it down, and I'll let you know when I've heard a word back from the Regal email, Lainey.
Thanks, mate. Cheers.
Yes, that's all right. So moving on as well, Brentford. We're known for the old celebrity circuit. Like, we had back in the day, we had all the Hollywood stars were all after us, weren't they? Remember that, Lainey? Back in the day, we had the Hollywood stars after
Cameron
us.
Diaz was
Oh,
supposedly a
Cameron
Brentford
Diaz.
fan.
No, not supposedly. She was a Brentford fan. She
And
talked
still
about
is.
it.
And still is.
Sylvester Stallone, I'm sure he was as well. Like Lyra, what's it, who else was? They were all. I mean, the whole of Hollywood was Brentford fan. I mean, saying that and laughing, I know we got a few American, quite a few American bees actually, because I used to go out there. One of our old chairman, Dan Tanner, and you remember Dan Tanner, don't you, Lainey? You know him very
Yeah,
well.
Dan Tanner. He was back at Brentford fairly recently, I believe. Shame we didn't catch up with him. Yeah, he was kind enough to provide a really thorough interview for the big Brentford Book of the 70s. And I went out for dinner with him and his daughter, and he couldn't have been more kind of entertaining and sort of open about his memories at Brentford. He's a very colourful character. He's lived several lives, and yeah, it's Dan Tanner has been sort of giving Brentford full props ever since over in LA. And I went past. I don't know if you went actually to his restaurant. I've
Yes.
driven past it, and yeah, it's a little bit of West London in on the West Coast.
Yeah, Dan Tanner, he's a Brentford chairman from the 70s. What was, well, I say at the time we were successful because we actually won the fourth tier, the Division Four Championship then, as under his sort of kind of tenureship as it was. So he was a very famous person within the Brentford sort of kind of regions. He's well, I say now it is Serbian. As he is. And it's interesting because when I went to Serbia a couple of years ago to go, well, I went to Serbia, then down to Kosovo, as you do by road, because we don't like doing things any easily. And I went to Red Star Belgrade, and I've got a special tour, which is set up by my brother-in-law for Red Star Belgrade. And as soon as I mentioned that I knew Dan Tanner, it was literally red carpet treatment. And they showed me photographs of Dan Tanner, who's very much involved with Red Star. And we did the old exchanging of the Brentford shirts with the Red Star shirts and the scarves and everything like that. So yes, that was interesting, Dan Tanner. But I did actually go to his restaurant, which is called Dan Tanner's. Funnily enough, in LA, and it's quite funny. I mean, it's a while I was going. I went there, and I remember going to the toilets, and as I was going to the loos, in between the loos, they've just got loads of Brentford photographs, and it's just, and I was like going, "Oh my God, look at all this Brentford stuff! It's just amazing." The Brentford, players holding up trophies and stuff, and he's just basically just got this wall full of like Brentford stuff, which I was really amazed with. And it's funny because it's like I said, and I've probably told this story before, but not for a while actually. But and it's basically it's a place which is really just like a bog standard trattoria, like an Italian trattoria with the red and white sort of kind of checkered tablecloths, and people just go along to it and have a drink and a bit of food, and it's not flash at all. But then if you look around, you think there's all these famous people there, and it's really, it's bizarre. You know what I'm saying? So I mean, I was sort of sitting there with my mates, we were having a right good drink, and then I sort of looked over in the next room, and Mariah Carey was sitting there with all sorts of characters just sitting at the table, like it's like she was sitting at the Globe. You know what I'm saying? It was like that, having a few drinks and just having a laugh, and again, I was in the loo, and I went to the loo. This guy came out who is with, I don't know this guy. He came and goes, "Oh my God, I can't believe I've seen." I can't remember this guy's name. And apparently, this guy that was beside him was in some sorts of all sorts of kind of X-rated movies, like you know what I'm saying. And he was very famous, apparently, like and this guy was just, he was absolutely flabbergasted. And I was just like, this Dan Tanner's place is quite amazing. But anyway, coming back to famous people, so we had, like you said, the tour bus with all the famous people back in the in the QPR days, in the Championship days, I think it was. And then recently, Laney, we've now got a famous person playing for us. David Beckham brought his son down and he paired in red and white stripes. And like I said, whoever's taken those photographs, I'm sure they're going to be making quite a lot of money actually selling it to the press with David Beckham's son, Romeo, in the red and white stripes as he played for the B team, didn't he?
Yes, he did. I wouldn't say it's caused a great big sort of A-list furore, but we've had Tatler magazine actually write an article on Brentford, and these are kind of like words I thought I'd never say, or if you've been kind of like walking past someone that's smoking something a little bit fruity. But this article, Tatler, if you don't know what Tatler is, it's kind of like a high society, kind of like Vogue, kind of luxury lifestyle magazine. It's been going for donkey's years. But, you know, I don't think the word Brentford's ever been typed by any of their sort of journalists ever. And they've written this feature, The Unexpected Luxuries Awaiting Romeo Beckham in Brentford. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things that could have been seen as a bit of a an April Fool's story a little while ago. But to be fair, they've not taken the pee out of us, which, you know, I just thought that they would, you know, look at all the grotty side of the town and kind of question why on earth he was there. But they've given the manners, Bill. They've kind of realised that we're an up and coming top flight team. We're being taken seriously, and there's some beautiful parts of London all around us. You know, we're sat on the Thames, it's been gentrified, it's true, and you know, it's not the same town as it was, you know, a decade, or certainly not two decades ago. But you've got to realize that, you know, we're opposite Kew Gardens, we've got Strand on the Green there, got Chiswick up the road, you know, Richmond's literally a stone's throw, it's a mile and a half. Got Sion Park and Austerley. You know, we're surrounded by, you know, West London jewels. I mean, you can't get away from the fact that Brentford is on the flight path, and it's been on in an unfashionable corner of West London because of the gasworks, etc., historically. But, you know, we've said this before, when the sun was out before the Man United game, we were down the Strand on the Green, weren't we? And we were saying, you know, is there anywhere apart from probably, you know, Fulham, that's more picturesque, in so much as that we, you know, we're literally on the Thames, the stadium's around the corner. We've got a dozen excellent pubs all there. It is impressive. It's not what it was, and some people may not like the new Brentford, but you know, and we haven't got to take Tatler's word for it. But you walk around our part of West London now, and you can't help but be impressed.
Yeah, and just for the word, actually, I mean, Romeo Beckham was actually training with the B team. The B team did have a match last week, but he didn't actually feature with the B team, I'd say, as yet, because obviously he's still, you know, here for a while. From what I can gather, is that he's actually going to be, he's in Miami. Like I said to you, he's actually in the Miami reserves team. And he's going to be here for just a while training with the Bees, and then afterwards he's going to go back to Miami. And if he plays football, of course you're going to have a look at him to see if he's any good, because obviously if he's like Messi, then of course we'd sign him next day. But it gives us the opportunity to have a look at him without having any pressure. But it's like I said, it's very interesting to this article, because this article is like nothing I've ever seen before. I mean, I was really confused. I was wondering whether or not it was like a parody article, like, you know, it's talking about downtime, spot Brentford players walking around Richmond by the river, in the park, on the terrace of number one Duke Street for smoothies in the morning and espresso martinis by night. Scots is open by the riverside, like, you know, and it says promising decadent fruits de mer and ruinar to a fine set of locals that include Zach Goldsmith. That's when I actually almost turned off, to be quite honest with you. Tom Hardy, Natalie Dormer, and Ben Shepherd, you know. But the old town favourite Gaucho is still alive and kicking a few minutes along for a ribeye and the guilty pleasure, a side of mac and cheese. So, I mean, you can see now why I thought it was a bit of a joke. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just like completely bizarre article, which just keeps going on about Brentford. And, you know, it sort of kind of veers more towards sort of Richmond and Petersham and sort of the posher areas, which obviously Tatler sort of is their clientele. But it is quite mad seeing, you know, Brentford mentioned in Tatler in this kind of in this way with Romeo Beckham, who, like I said to you, is still training for the Bees, I think, for another week before he goes back to Miami. To go and join Inter Miami again. So,
By the way, Bill, apparently Friday afternoon, if you're around our manor, the article says, don't be surprised, and I'd hate for you to be surprised. Don't be surprised if you bump into Dwayne Johnson, Brad Pitt, or Catherine Zeta-Jones, who have all been known to stay in and around the area. And it says here, and are regulars at the Royal Horse Guardsman, it says. Allegedly
at the Royal Horse Guards. Tell you something though, did you notice that there's a lot of places, I mean, it mentioned a lot of places, very lovely places as well, but they messed up quite a lot of places, didn't they, Lainey? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, the Water Museum for a start, I'm really surprised that Tatler didn't mention the Steam Museum as well. And the Water Museum. They didn't mention that as well. Obviously, the Globe, I mean, they all talk about the Globe, but none of them actually talked about that. Tatler didn't, obviously not high class enough for them. What else did you think?
I'm really surprised they didn't mention the old Army Surplus place along the jet garage opposite O'Riordan's. Catherine Zeta-Jones was. I know she likes to rummage around sort of 70s military clothing. So yeah, I mean that's a glaring error, I'd say. I might have to write into them this afternoon.
And also, I mean, if people are coming down to the area and they want to stay, I mean, I'm surprised I didn't write about the Travelodge actually, because it's right there, smack in bang in the middle. Actually,
perfect. They do an incredible eggs royale, apparently. Tattinger, I think, is their you know, it's their go-to champagne rather than the Reynard.
And Fat Boy's Tie as well, which I'm not sure if it's still there, but maybe that's the reason why they haven't talked about it in Tatler. But you know, if you get
they're more into their Tuscan culinary delights rather than the Southeast Asian fusion, I'd say, Bill. But yeah, that's right. You never know.
No, you never know. Anyway, so look, great article. Go and check. We put it in the description box, and you actually go and check it out afterwards. What else was there, actually? I'll tell you something. We are going to talk about the Newcastle match in a little bit, but there's one thing about that Newcastle. I mean, I was on the Anfield Rep for today. You know, I'm on there about every 2 weeks now. So it was great just talking with the Liverpool fans, and they were laughing about us both being the same sort of predicament, basically, in the shitter, as they said, you know. And we were just talking about, you know, I said to them, look, you know, they said, Bill, what went wrong? And I said, you know, right. I said, it's really hard to describe, but, you know, when one thing goes wrong, and then everything goes wrong. That was what happened at Newcastle, literally. Everything went wrong. And sometimes, like I said to you, when that happens in one area, it happens a lot. And it's the same thing for me as well at home. I mean, maybe a little bit boring for some of you, but I don't know if anybody else has the same thing where all of a sudden, like literally everything goes wrong at once. So I've got my fridge and I've seen water coming out the bottom of the fridge. So the fridge starts leaking. You think, oh no, that's really bad. And then I've gone out and then somebody bumped into my car and then the car's gone. So I've got to get that fixed at the same time. And at the same time, then my washing machine, I've just come out, I've just put the clothes on and the water's leaking out of the washing machine at the same time, literally within
gosh, a couple of days.
That's right. And then the dryer as well has gone. I've been trying to get some parts of a dryer. I mean, it's literally gone like one day after the warranty is up as well. And so like my dryer's gone. So it's like one of those things. It's almost like the Newcastle game. Literally, when one thing goes wrong, everything goes wrong at the same time. And I'm just wondering, because I was thinking, I wonder if the washing machine person, the dryer person, and the fridge person, they all kind of got together and they said, listen, let's just make this thing last exactly this amount of time so that he can have chaos all at once. Like, you know, and I don't know if that same thing happened on the pitch at Newcastle where they just thought, okay, this is going to be gay. What we'll do is that we'll all be brilliant. And we'll just really disrupt Brentford all at once. You know, we could be crap for the rest of the season, but we'll just have this one game where we'll be brilliant. You know, Leeds are probably thinking the same thing about us against them, aren't they, Lady?
Yeah, although you could spin it. You could just say, like, it was an afternoon
washing machine.
Yes, where everything went right for Newcastle rather than everything went wrong for us. But, you know, that's just another way of looking at it.
It's not such a good story, though, is it?
No, and it's not actually the truth, because it did, you know, it was a, you know, coin a phrase, it was a shit show. And yes. you know, you're right to say everything that did go wrong or could go wrong did go wrong. You know, from the minute the goal was disallowed for, you know, for again a toenail offside or you know, kind of being involved when he actually didn't touch the ball. You know, Thomas Frank had strong words after that, didn't he? He said it was pathetic to kind of blame what happened after that on a disallowed goal. But yeah, it was a calamity.
It was a calamity, which we'll be talking about in a little minute. And then just last thing, I know that we were talking about in the last couple of weeks, we were talking about sort of teams that are going to get relegated and teams that are going to go down. We just touched on it a little bit just because it was, you know, it's just something that we like to talk about because even though we're Brentford fans, we're always looking down and not looking up quite a lot of the time. Interestingly, because it was just noticed that Andy Scott, who obviously used to be our manager, and remember we sang about him in the Globe when we went up that season for about 3 hours continuously, you know, the Andy Scott song, oh, Andy Scott. Anyway, so anyway, and he went on to, and then he came back to Brentford, did a bit of scouting for us, then became our head of scouting. And then he went on to Watford, then went on to Swansea, and then he became a mate of our mate Cooper at Swansea, which made us very unhappy. And then Cooper took him to Nottingham Forest with him. And now all the Nottingham Forest fans, and we talked about this last week, who used to call us spreadsheet wankers, and they've now like wanting to be spreadsheet wankers. And now one of my Forest mates messaged me going, we've just sacked the spreadsheet wanker. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And they've sacked Andy Scott because they're really unhappy with him because they're blaming him for spending £160 million on new players. And they're just not happy with the players that they brought in, apparently. So, again, we just mentioned that point. It's quite interesting, though, isn't it, Laney? How the about turn comes and people are they're really happy, then they're really unhappy, and then Andy Scott comes in and he's linked in with doing things that we're meant to be doing. And I think they're moaning the fact that they wanted him to do things in the Brentford way, but it hasn't quite happened that way.
No, well, I mean, you know, it's we see that with everyone that leaves Brentford. You know, it's you're privy to maybe, you know, the next transfer window or maybe two transfer windows times, you know, names or targets or proposed, suggested, you know, players that, you know, were being touted. But beyond that, once you're out of the Brentford kind of knowledge loop, you're on your own. And it's, you know, you can't keep up, you know, you can't replace that incredible backroom recruitment and, you know, statistical number crunching and just the brains that are involved in, you know, the teams that we employ now. So, you know, Warburton, he struggled. Rosler, he struggled. You know, Scott has kind of reinvented himself two or three times at other places, and I'm not for 1 minute suggesting he's been found out, because he's, you know, he's obviously become, you know, a chum of Evans, and it was difficult. What I'm reading last night on Nottingham Forest social media, just kind of them saying the toxic atmosphere that started to kind of permeate out of the club, you know, there's chasmic cracks starting to appear, you know, on the back of spending countless millions, you know, 150 million plus, you know, you said before, you know, the wages aren't factored into those numbers, you know, the results aren't going their way, they're in a relegation dogfight, and, you know, they stand every chance of going back to the Championship. Whether they do or not, only time will tell. But, you know, there are casualties in the kind of backroom hierarchy already. Scott has paid the price, although we see Evans has been given a long-term contract. So it doesn't seem to be that joined up.
Cooper,
at Forest.
Cooper.
Sorry, Cooper. I was going to say Evans. Sorry,
Evans is the CEO, I think it is.
Yeah. Sorry. I meant Cooper. So
yeah, there's malarkey going on there. Again, I'm not quite understanding what's going on, but, you know, we're just talking about other clubs because we're interested in seeing what's going on. You know, and just
but especially when they, you know, they drop our name into the equation as if, like, you know, they're going to, you know, the idea is to copy what's happening at Brentford. So you kind of go, oh, okay, well, how's that going to pan out then? You know, and 3 or 4 months down the line, it's not working out particularly well. You know, and they might turn around and say, well, you know, the last few games haven't been particularly great for you, and, you know, you're not sort of like ripping the league up like you were a couple, you know, a 5 or 6 weeks ago. But, you know, we know that we're missing one player to come back, really, to make a big difference for us, where they're still making 5 or 6 changes every week because they've got no idea what their best team is.
Yeah, and again, this whole thing, we've talked about this before, and we've said this, you know, this is the clever thing about Brentford, and this is why, and it comes more and more obvious, and I keep talking about the Mark Warburton thing. You know, it was all about Mark Warburton when he was here, and he was very much controlling things, and it basically said, it's got to go my way or the highway, and it was end of story. And, you know, Matthew Benham just turned around and said, listen, we can't be running a club like this because it should be about a collaborative way. Yes, we've got people that have got their ideas, but it's got to be collaborative. We can't have one person ruling the roost. And now what's happened is that, yes, we have got important people in there, but they're surrounded by some infrastructure. And you've got this infrastructure, you've got this ecosystem around Brentford. So it's about, you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 people. They're all part of it. You know what I'm saying? If you pluck one person out of it, put them themselves elsewhere, unless they take quite a lot of the ecosystem with them, they're going to have to create their own ecosystem. And the problem is that that's obviously not as easy as it sounds like.
100%, you know, and that's, you know, I have to mention the Brentford Revolution book that's just coming out. It went to the print last week, so that will be back first week of November. So if you bought it, your copies will be in the post to you. But Andy Scott is someone that, you know, we interviewed at length, and he talks about, you know, the mistakes he made in you know, as a manager, how he learned from that. And he, you know, the regrets, you know, the regret of walking away from Brentford again to go to Watford. So, you know, it's a fascinating sort of insight into how his kind of career has moved on. But, you know, again, as you rightly said, Bill, it's that decision that Matthew Benham made to change the way the football club was run. It kind of stemmed from being exposed to, you know, that era.
That's right, indeed. So listen, we've spent long enough trying to avoid talking about the Newcastle match, but we're going to have to talk about the Newcastle match. I'm going to go. I'm going to have a cup of tea because tea is back on. I mean, you're all thinking, where's the beer? But listen, the beer will be back. I mean, we had loads of beer at the weekend, so I think tea is more in order. I'm going to get a cup of tea, I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about Newcastle. So last weekend, we went up to Newcastle. And I was thinking about, how do we present this one? Okay. Normally we go straight into the football and we go, oh yeah, this is brilliant. Oh yeah, fantastic. But actually, no, I think let's go chronological. Let's start off the journey. Let's just start off as it happened. Okay. So Friday night, or Friday day, met up Laney, King's Cross. You know, we met up at King's Cross. We got our usual surprise and got on the train. And, you know, decent journey up to Newcastle going up there on Friday. I know a lot of people had a lot of problems because they had the train strikes and there was all sorts of mega buses and planes, people flying to Dublin and then across and people trying to make their way down over land and sea and all that lot. But it was all right, actually, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was all right. Yeah, we got, you know, we got a rail splitter, didn't we? So we got as far as York in one hit, pretty much. Yeah. And then nice and comfy, all settled down. And then people got on at York and kind of went, you're in our seats. And we're like, no, we've been on here since London. And it's like, no. So we had to move somewhere else, didn't we? So we stood up for a bit and then we eventually found somewhere else. So thought it was going to end in a bit of a stand-up fluff. But yeah, then we got to Newcastle and we went out and we had a good time, did we?
That's
not?
Right. Well, yeah, we went up to the Wylam Brewery. If you haven't been to the Wylam Brewery, it's wicked. It's like in this old kind of, in the Palace of the Arts, I think it's called. And it's just in this big park and this old sort of kind of beautiful building. And we went there and had a few ales on Friday night, you know, which is cool, before we headed back into town. Impressed with the Wylam, were you?
Yeah, I was. I didn't see any, you know, Tatler kind of A-listers in there, to be honest. Because that's why we went, wasn't it? We thought if we're, you know, we're Brentford now, we need to go to these kind of joints where we can sip chilled pink champagne and tuck into a bit of creme de menthe.
That's right, creme de menthe, and sit with you know, with all sorts of Hollywood stars. But there's none of them there, actually.
No.
All beards, and they were drinking real ale, which was really disappointing, right? You know, so we did that, head back into town, and then we had a bit of a night out on a Friday night in Newcastle, which was decent. And then Saturday, Laney. the Saturday. Because I have to say, though, that you were a little bit scared, because on the Friday night, you didn't want to peak too early. On the Friday night, you didn't want to peak too early, did you? I mean, I was up for going all the way, but you didn't want to peak too early.
Well, you went all the way on Saturday, so I don't mean, don't worry about it. I mean, you even found out how basic consumerism works, didn't you, when you went back to the hotel. Bill needed to get some water before going to bed, and he kind of said to the receptionist, like, you know, looks at the fridge and went, how does this water buying thing work? And she went, well, you take it out of the fridge, you bring it over to me, and I'll take some money from you. try out in a pub next time, mate.
I was a bit confused, and it was a bit late at the time, but I just thought, you know, sometimes these hotels have got these high-fangled sort of policies as to what you can do, or maybe you have to press a button and the water comes out. And I thought it was a bit flashier than that, but I didn't realize it was literally open the fridge and take it to her, and then she'll just ask you for your card and you pay the money. So I was a little bit embarrassed, but it was 2 a.m. We had a few.
We did have a few. Well, yeah. I mean, like, Saturday started off really, really well, didn't it? You know, good breakfast. And then
loads of bees in the Holiday Inn.
Loads of bees. Yeah, really excellent. Good vibe. Everyone's looking forward to their happy Saturday.
That's right.
And you know, we went to the fourth pub, didn't we? And
that's right.
Getting really good vibe in there.
Yeah. And tell you what was really nice as well, like, loads of Newcastle, and we keep saying this. I mean, if you just do one away day, just do Newcastle, or do Newcastle and Liverpool. But literally, we're inside the fourth, and literally had people, Newcastle fans, turning up in the fourth, and they're just going, oh, who are the Besotted lads? I mean, we had no, because we didn't put the word out there. Oh, yeah, look, we just come over to just shake your hands at you and say, thanks very much. You know, hope you enjoy the game today. Not too much, blah, blah, blah. And then they go off. Or they go around the corner and have a drink. And it's not really weird, because I think the Newcastle characters that we know obviously put the word out, because we were saying, where's there to go to drink? And they told us where they are. But people actually took time out to come over to us, shake their hands, have a few words with us, and then just go off. They weren't sort of kind of impinging on what we were doing. And I thought that was actually kind of really nice. So it was a nice little pre-match. We had the Newcastle podcast turned up as well. You know, they turned up, you know, a little bit late because they had a few train problems, because I think he lives in Colchester, actually, Norm, you know, from True Faith. So he lives in Colchester. So he had a bit of a nightmare getting up, but he came over as well just to say hello, popped in, you know, didn't even have a drink, just stayed for 5-10 minutes, had a quick chat. And then he shot off to the ground. I think he was, I think he tattered himself right up, actually, because he sounded like he'd prawn sandwiched himself right up, didn't he, Laney?
Yeah, he was a nice guy. And he spoke really well, didn't he, on last week's podcast. So, you know, if you've got 6 or 7 hours, I'd suggest you sit down and listen to that again. he can talk, can't he? Yeah. but he, you know, if you don't, you know, we asked him to give us the SP on Newcastle, and he certainly did that. He knows the club inside out. But you're right about the Newcastle fans. They are they're knowledgeable football fans. They love their football. You know, they, you know, love that kind of, like, slightly kind of expecting greatness because the size of their club. But they've not had it great, have they, recently? And they've not won anything for, you know, 50 plus years. So, you know, for them to be filling out that colossus of a stadium and having that vibe, I mean, the city is the football club, pretty much, isn't it? You know, it's like everyone knows everything that's going on at St James's Park. It is incredible to witness that. But they're a friendly bunch, and that's, you don't get that everywhere else, do you, Bill?
No, not at all. But, I mean, coming back to Norm, I mean, again, if you listen to the last week's podcast, he gave us a very, very comprehensive rundown on Newcastle. And the thing is that when you listen to it, I listened to it and I thought, Christ almighty, he kind of reminded me of my mate Pete. Remember the Artful Dodger, Pete, who is Craig David, the Artful Dodger, when we went down to Southampton.
Yes,
and
right.
Pete from the Artful Dodger, he said to him, right, Pete, how about Southampton? And he's going, yeah, well, we've got Lallana, and he's going to tear you apart. We've got this, he's going to tear you apart. He's going to tear you apart. Everyone's going to tear you. And, like, we were there, like, you know, our face was, like, you know, sort of kind of washed out, thinking, oh, Christ, we might as well go home, because he's just basically told us we're going to get absolutely hammered. And then we ended up going beating Southampton that day, and I didn't hear from Pete for about another 2 years after that. You know what I'm saying? I was hoping it was going to be the same, because after Norm gave us that thing on the podcast, I was thinking, Christ almighty, like, you know, they sound really good, and we have got no chance here. But I was hoping it's going to be an Artful Dodger moment, but unfortunately it wasn't an Artful Dodger moment, was it?
No, I wish we dodged the whole game. It was grim. You know, I think to be fair to Brentford, we started off fairly okay. You know, it was an evenly matched game, and you know, you could probably say, you know, it wasn't a 5-1 match. It wasn't. You know, I've seen Brentford get turned over, and deservedly so, quite a lot of times in my life. But it was pretty much all self-inflicted. We did allow them to have a lot of possession. There is a weakness in the midfield at the moment, and we know why. You know, it's a Norgard shaped hole that we're trying to fill. You said it last week. You know, to go out and get another Norgard is going to cost you 30, 40 million quid. He's that good, and that's why he's that missed. And that's not really knocking everyone else that's, you know, replacing him. If they're not as good as Norgard, that encapsulates a lot of players around the world, most players around the world. So that Newcastle have got their tails up. You know, it's a different era for them, and there's been big spending, and they're playing some good football. They're playing some expansive. They get the ball wide, they run at you, and they've got threats all over the place. And we're lucky we didn't have Sam Maximan on from the start, or he was fit. But you know, you make schoolboy errors in a Premiership game. That's what happens to you, you know. And you know, it was one after the other, after the disallowed goal, which, you know, we'd celebrated, and they'd gone back to the halfway line, and we're waiting for it to kick off. Once that VAR's gone against you, you kind of suspect that it may not be your day.
Definitely. So listen, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit, but what we're going to do, go back to Saturday. We spoke to a lot of fans, both Brentford and Newcastle fans. We're going to listen to what they had to say immediately after the match, in the stands, in the streets, and in the pub. After the game,
I don't mind losing or winning or drawing, and we come out and we come fighting. Today it just wasn't there. The bees were not there today. It's disappointing. It's upsetting. But today just didn't turn out, and we should have as well. Newcastle, we could have had them a little bit, but listen, win or lose, on the booze, on the bees.
I think it's controlling midfield. Last year we had Eriksen in the second half of the season. We controlled games. We dominated. This season we don't have that man. We played three in the middle today and we had no control of the game at any point. Newcastle are a good team, but they're not a great team. We came here last year with not a great team. We got a draw. And today I think the squad's actually better, but we've just not managed to do it.
Giving away comedy goals. Absolute no concentration. Absolute relegation stuff. Pure relegation.
If Tony was onside for the first goal, it would have been a completely different game. But I think that as I went to Bournemouth last week, again, we lacked a midfield. There's nothing really going forward. I think defensively, even though we conceded five, you get rid of David Raya's mistake, you get rid of Pinnock's mistake, his own goal. So that's 2-1. Close down Bruno, it's 1-1. But again, it was a wonder strike from Bruno. But I just think that I think in January, we have to sign a player who's going to take us to the next level, almost a bit like an Eriksen, but maybe even try Damsgaard as a number 10 to try and progress the play forwards, because I think every game we're lacking that killer instinct in front of goal.
I did get a little bit out of the way. I didn't think anything bounced for us or fell for us, to be fair. I didn't think every little bit of luck probably went their way. The VAR for the first goal would have maybe changed things, but what can you do when you just make probably five mistakes for five goals? I mean, they were some shockers. Some absolute shockers in there. Not, you know, Pinnock's one for the fourth goal, Ayers for the mistake that led to Pinnock's own goal, no marking by Josh for the first goal. What am I missing? Second one, Raya. Third one, gave the ball away in midfield, you know, for the long shot. I mean, it was just goal after goal, wasn't it? In patches, we looked all right going forwards. We tried. It was always going to be difficult. They're a decent team. Well, they've certainly got some decent players. Is it a longer-term worry? We certainly missed leadership of Pontus and Norgard. I think maybe it would have steadied us a bit, particularly after we pulled a goal back, made it 2-1. We probably just needed to tighten up for 5 minutes. You know, we were back in the game at that point, and to let in a goal, another 25-yard shot that we let in, made it really, really hard. But yeah, there's some worrying signs there today.
To be fair, Brentford are a decent team, and we didn't think it would be easy today, but I think once we got that first goal, and then the second one, 2-0 at half-time, you came out a bit in the second half,
But once we rode that storm, I think, we kind of thought, yeah, this could be our day.
Too many individual mistakes ultimately cost us the game, but I just didn't think we ever really looked up for it. I think today it was glaringly obvious that we were missing a combative midfielder, someone to break up the play. We were overrun so easily at times in that game, and it was quite hard to watch. And you know, without Norgaard, clearly we're weakened.
So there you go, the fans giving you their thoughts after that match. I mean, listen, you know, you can't deny it. You know, everyone said, you know, don't know what happened there, Bill. You know, let's just go off and have a good night. You know, and we just made loads of mistakes. But I mean, let's just go through that, because there's one thing that you talked about there, Lainey, and which I think is actually was a pivotal point as well. The disallowed goal, because we did start brightly. You know, it's almost like you forget about that because it was quite early in the game. We started brightly. We scored a goal. And we were celebrating, and then the whole VAR incident happened, and we didn't know what was going on. You know, we were all ready to go again, and then the game got stopped, and then the VAR, and then they overturned the decision. Now, to me also, I think it looked like almost we had the stuffing knocked out of us, because as fans we did, because we were sort of kind of quite lively to start off with, and then we just, the away end just died, like, you know, and then the atmosphere was fairly rubbish, to be honest, wasn't it?
Yeah, it did. You know, if you're a top end manager like Thomas Frank is, or if you're, you know, a top end Premiership player, you'd be right to say that, you know, you can't let a decision like that goes against you affect you for the next kind of 80 minutes. But you know, they're human beings as well, and I thought the decision was fairly kind of. It was marginal again. You know, you can see the reasons why it was disallowed, but then equally you could say, you know, you could see why it should have stood. And I don't often see those kind of offside decisions go to the, you know, to the screen at the side of the pitch. They're normally decided in the studio or in the VAR suite at Stockley Park. So I was slightly I was slightly confused to see the referee sort of go over to the side of the pitch and then rule it out. And from the minute he strolled over there, it was obvious what was going to happen. But yeah, it did. It was like the plug had been pulled from our backs, and it just really went wrong from there on in. And before they scored, I have to admit, I was thinking, you know, we're doing all right still. You know, they're not really stretching. They're stretching us a bit, but we weren't hanging on. And that, you know, that the drag back corner that was floated to the far post, and the Bruno header. Bruno. Yeah, I mean, you know, it just bounced in the perfect place to bounce over the diving arm of Raya, and then obviously the awful clearance, you know, the pass that never was, from Raya for the second goal. It really did finish us off. And although we did have a purple patch at the beginning of the second half, and we got a goal back fairly quickly, the mistake that happens straight after that, and you know, their third goal, Bruno second, it was just game over then.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we've gone straight into the game, but what we didn't mention, and this is something that people may not have seen, or you might have seen it on online, was the display before the match, which I mean, I know that you were really unhappy with, Lainey, weren't you?
Yeah, I was. You know, again, I don't really want to go too deeply into the whole Saudi takeover. I mean, you know, some say it's none of our business, but you know, it does, you know, leave a sort of a bitter taste in the mouth when you look at the regime, and what, you know, how they operate and how they treat, you know, their citizens, you know, obviously of course women, but the choreographed huge flag and at the Gallagher end was vast. It took up pretty much the whole of that end, which is like 10,000-15,000 people. It covered them, and they kind of recreated the Sky Sports News screen with like a picture of Staveley and the other new owner, news like bullet points running down the right hand side, and they got some fans, I assume they were fans, to walk the yellow ticker tape kind of bottom rolling news feed from the bottom right hand side of the stand to the left. And it was just kind of like It was really cringy, if I'm honest with you. You know, it was almost like brainwashing.
Propaganda gate.
It was propaganda. It was. Gate. It was propaganda. You know, it was all about the new owners and them. And okay, you know, it's a big deal that they got rid of an owner that they hated and despised before. But yeah, it was just a bit odd.
Okay, I've got to listen, Lane. Okay, I know it's them, and you talk about, you know, the Saudi Arabian regime and everything like that. But let's just be devil's advocate here. So, you know, Matthew Benham comes in and he puts some money into the club and he takes us from the brink of extinction to the Premier League. Would you be there in the West End holding up a big sort of kind of Benham sign with, you know, with the Parker coat, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, maybe a few computers and songs, guitar. And I don't know. Would you be happy? No, I wouldn't.
And, you know, at the end of the day, they were already, I know they were bottom of the Premier League, but they were, you know, an established Premier League team already. So it's not, they've not taken them from the bottom tier. So, it was just as I say, cringy. And I think as a lot of Newcastle fans would probably agree. And I'd be really hacked off if I was underneath that flag, you know, and I didn't get any choice. You know, they missed a good 10, 15 minutes of the warm-up to the game, all for TV. You know what I mean? I'm not a prop for the TV cameras when I go to the game. You know, I don't want to be stood underneath a football pitch size flag promoting, you know, something I may not necessarily agree with. But yeah, Newcastle fans, they're probably split as the rest of the football world on what's happened there.
Yeah, and then just coming back to the match, like I said to you, Bruno, it's interesting because if you look at sort of who scored as well, if you look at the ratings that both team players got, most of the Brentford and the Newcastle players actually got quite similar, not great scores, or like 6.5, 6.7s, like, you know, maybe somebody went 7. It was just Bruno who was just like, wow, he's on fire. So he was like a 9 out of 10 as far as they were concerned. But everybody else, and then we had a couple of, obviously, like Raya and Pinnock, who got really bad scores, like, you know, like 4.5s and stuff like that. There's a couple of things. I mean, I'd say for Pinnock, and maybe, you know, don't forget, I hadn't seen the playing game back. I just saw it from the stands way, way up there with the whole of sort of like the northeast in the background of Newcastle. Really amazing view as well from the top there, especially on a lovely day like that where you see the stadium and then you look beyond you and literally you could see the whole of the northeast just beyond the stadium. So I was watching the game and I thought Pinnock actually had a good game. And I even turned around and you said, he's a really good player. You know, I forgot about him. You know, he went in for some clearances and it's really good. Then all of a sudden, as soon as he said that, he had his nightmare moment and then another nightmare moment. And that kind of was stamped his kind of, you've had a terrible game type thing. But I thought before that, he actually had a decent game. And it's interesting because Thomas Frank said that he probably should have pulled him before he actually, instead of giving the full 90 minutes, because he knew that he wasn't fit. So he kind of sort of probably undid a lot of the good that he did earlier on in the game by making those silly mistakes.
Yeah, right. It was a tired pass, wasn't it? And it was a tired kind of attempt for, you know, to get his foot there for the own goal. So, yeah. Hindsight is a wonderful thing. Thomas Frank's got substitutions right quite often this season. He certainly didn't get that one right, and it was clear that Pinnock was struggling with his 90-minute fitness. And Raya, to his credit, had pulled out an incredible save.
Early on,
tipping one round the post, right on the top corner. That was going, and then you follow that up with, you know, again, it's like an under 8 kind of game where you've got a really dodgy keeper and they just like kick it out straight to a player, and you know, you think, you know, what the hell's going on here? You know, how do we stand a chance of winning this when you're giving away goals like that? And you get as good as you can play, you just can't expect to get anything out of a match at this level when you've actually gifted them 4 goals, which, you know, I think it's fair to say that we did. You know, it was just amateur play at certain points, which we just didn't do ourselves justice. We need to bounce back.
100%. And again, not banging on too much about it, but I mean, you know, our coach grassroots football, and I've got a club on the Panthers who played the previous weekend. And the thing is, I mean, we played really well. But in that match, we did exactly that same thing. We're literally, both the goals we gave away were Brentford goals or Brentford were Panthers goals, exactly similar. And that's that thing where in grassroots football, you see teams do that a lot where goalkeepers who are not very experienced, they'll get the ball, make a great save, then they'll throw the ball to the opposition, straight to the opposition, and the opposition go bang in the back of the net and it's all undone. And it's like Brentford, what they did was exactly what you're saying. It was schoolboy, schoolgirl error type stuff, which is really frustrating. And you can't do anything about that because you could play the most brilliant game possible. But then as soon as you've done that twice, three times, then that just completely unravels all the good things that you've been doing. I mean, also just coming back to Hickey as well. I mean, you talked about the tired pass. I mean, Hickey, again, he's sort of normally fairly reliable. But again, you know, he got robbed on sort of halfway into his own half. And then, you know, Newcastle immediately go on the attack. The thing about it is that Newcastle actually, I thought, were, you know, you didn't think they were that great. But I thought that they were good on the counter, spreading the ball wide really quickly, right, which is really stretching our team and then getting the ball in and just causing problems. And again, they, you know, they robbed us, got the ball to Bruno. Bruno had a shot from, what, 30-odd yards, which technically probably shouldn't have beaten Raya. But no, it's quite a good shot, though, you know. Yeah, so, you know, yeah, but it beat him, you know. And so these things, you know, 9 times out of 10 shouldn't happen. But at the same time, it's the fact we got robbed. It's not the shot that beat him. You know, we should never have got robbed in that play because we were just, if you looked at us, all the players are literally scrambling back, trying to, you know, there's moments where we're scrambling the whole time where it's almost like we're not 100% in control of that game. And Newcastle were hitting us hard and fast every time. And they were kind of controlling the situation. And when you're on that, you know, you're always going to be on the back foot. And, you know, maybe you might have got a lucky goal to have sort of kind of subsided that as such. But in general, Newcastle were definitely all over us.
Yeah, and, you know, we have to break their press, and Hickey was trying to break the press by, you know, in that instance, by literally running through them, which you need a lot of pace to get through that. And I know he's no slouch, but, you know, he was running into trouble, and, you know, he got tackled. I think he was expecting that to be a foul, but then it was just one pass back of the net. And, you know, and I guess on the, you know, on the plus, not on the plus side, but if you're looking for kind of like a little bit more hope, is that you've got to hope that we got all our mistakes out of the way in one hit rather than one massive mistake every game for the next 5 matches, which stop us getting more points. That stopped us getting any points up there by making 4 big mistakes. If we can make sure that doesn't happen in the next match, then, you know, it's something we can just leave behind us, I hope. But, you know, it was a hard watch second half. And I didn't think, I thought Newcastle would, you know, were good. I think they were, you know, they didn't massively impress me. I think we made them look good. And, you know, the scoreline did flatter them to a certain extent, but, you know, fair play. They took the chances. They didn't get handed opportunities on the plate and waste them. They were clinical when anything came their way. And, you know, I take my hats off to them for that. You know, I've got no ill feeling towards Newcastle whatsoever. And as you said, you know, the fans we met before and afterwards, you hope they do all right this season.
Definitely. So listen, what we're going to do, tell you what we're going to do, tell you something. Actually, you know what we're going to do? We're going to talk about the player of the match, because Jensen actually got player of the match, which I thought was quite interesting, considering the amount of grief that he gets. But it's almost interesting that he's upped his game a lot, and a lot of people start to recognise what he brings to Brentford.
Yep. Still people very reluctant to give him any credit. You know, there's a few people on Twitter afterwards saying, oh, man of the match, you're joking. The you know, yes, he's passing is accurate, but 80% of them are kind of like floaty nothing passes. Well, you know, that's really kind of disrespectful, I'd say. You know, most of the great players in the world, I'm not saying he is one of the great players in the world, but some of the best players in the center of midfield, the people that they call quarterbacks, that's exactly what they do. They do the simple thing. There's a lot being asked of him. It is in the Premier League. And I think he's had a cracking start to this season. And without him, I don't think we're sitting comfortable in the division. You know, yes, the couple of heavy defeats have happened to Arsenal and to Newcastle, but you know, we're certainly not looking up at the division, going, how the hell do we get out of this position and get to some semblance of safety? We're like where we were for a lot of last year, kind of looking behind us, but got enough about us to kind of not get caught up in any of that. Jensen, I thought, you could always ask more from your players, and yeah, he could improve, but he was certainly the man of the match, and it's, you know, I don't think you could argue with that.
No. So listen, when we want a little pick me up, we always go to JB because he's got some facts and some funk, and JB has tried to wangle up a bit of Newcastle facts and funk. Let's go over to JB.
Virtual back again. As mentioned on last week's podcast, Brentford's visits to Newcastle are always full of goals. They've now seen 40 in our 8 trips, an average of exactly 5 per game. The lowest point in Brentford's recent history is probably in 2007 when Terry Butcher's side lost 7-0 away at Peterborough in the 4th tier, with the likelihood of falling out of the Football League looking a distinct possibility. Since then, we played 673 league games, sit as the 11th best side in the country, and during that time, but only once before Saturday, letting 5 goals in a single league game. And that was at Norwich 8 years ago. The Newcastle game was the first time David Raya had let in 5 league goals for us. And in fact, it was the first time he had done so since he was the keeper for Blackburn Rovers in a match at Griffin Park in 2019, which the Bees won 5-2. But on the credit side, Ivan Toney notched his 7th penalty in the top tier against fellow England squad member Nick Pope. He is now equaled Duncan McKenzie's record, who scored 7 penalties for us back in our original Division 1 seasons in the 1930s, although he also missed 3, whereas Ivan still maintains his 100% record.
So there you go, JB with some facts and some funk. And I'm just thinking, because I have been to every single game that Brentford have played against Newcastle in the last, I think, 30 years. Since the sort of late 90s, when mid 90s to now, I've been to every single one, which means that I have seen 40 goals, because there have been 40 goals in our last 8 trips to Newcastle, according to JB. That's a quite phenomenal amount of goal action, isn't it, Laney?
Yes, it is. And it's mostly at our end of the pitch, isn't it? To be honest with you. Yeah, it's just, it's not been that fruitful, our encounters with the Geordies, is it? It's something we need to kind of address, I'd say, back at New Griffin Park later on this season.
Right, what, you're going to stick it right up them, is that right, Laney?
Yeah, well, we do. We owe them. Yeah, we 100% owe them. Yeah.
That's right. And then I said last time, I know that, you know, DJ Steve's from Corrupt FM as well. Big Beast fan, stands with us in the West Stand, as well as his whole family do as well. And I remember when we played Newcastle, was it 2017, was it? And when they were down in the Championship for that one season as well, they had Chub Buddy G from Corrupt FM, who's actually a Newcastle fan. He's actually on our video. If you go and check out sort of Newcastle Brentford video, Besotted, we've got the whole sort of Corrupt FM crew on there, including Chub Buddy, who did some sort of kind of nonsense to camera. I think he's sort of trying to sort of disguise himself as being sort of a Brentford fan, you know, in the Brentford end, but being a Newcastle fan. So that's actually quite funny. But yeah, I'm like, what, are you a Newcastle fan? And he's just like, don't even ask, like, you know. So anyway, Chub Buddy is a Newcastle fan. He obviously wasn't up there on Saturday, but you might see him at New Griffin Park for the return match in a couple of, in a few months' time. So anyway, listen, Laney, we have a match on Friday night. It is on the box, and we have got a South Coast Buddies coming down from Brighton. We're going to go away, have another cup of tea, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk all about Brighton. So yeah, we got Brighton coming up. Just going back to the five goals that we let in, JB also talked about that Norwich match as well, which is the only time that we've let in 5 goals for absolute ages. And that's another game that I've put to the back of my mind. Do you remember that Norwich game? We got battered 5-0 by Norwich. Pretty sure.
Yeah, I do. It was one of the lowest points of my life. I'll leave that.
It was a trip that we were very much looking forward to, but it didn't quite go to plan for a number of reasons. That's all I can say. So that Norwich match as well, like I said to you, but we don't often let in five goals. As Laney says, let's hope it's a one-off. Anyways, it's moving forward to Brighton. Brighton are coming down on Friday night. And I've got my old mate, Ralph Brown, who just messaged me. He's a big actor. Ralph, he's living in America at the moment now, but he's coming back over from the America to the UK, and he's going to be coming to the game on Friday. Ralph is the old Camberwell Carrot, if you remember him from back in the day, you know, in With Nail and I, but also he's been in millions of things since, you know, loads and loads of other movies, Miami Vice in sort of With Nail, you know, and all sorts of stuff that he's been on. The Boat That Rocked as well. He was the DJ on The Boat That Rocked when it was going down under the water. So Ralph's going to be with us in the Globe on Friday, which is all good. Looking forward to seeing the Ralphie in the house. I haven't seen him for about a year or so, I think. And
yeah, I look forward to that. He's a lovely guy.
He's great. Yeah, and he's not coming to the World Cup with us because in Qatar, that's when I first met him in 1998 on a train going down to Toulouse. He was trying to flog some tickets for South Africa. We just started talking and became mates. We've been to every single World Cup since, but he's not going to Qatar, which is a real shame because I think he can't actually get over there. So it'll be good to catch up with him. But anyway, Ralph Brown will be in the house, but also the Brighton posse will be in the house, but also the Albion Roar are now in the house because Adey Packham is going to give us the lowdown on Brighton and what they've been up to and what he's expecting for the game on Friday.
Hi, my name's Adey Packham. I'm the presenter of the Albion Roar radio show and podcast on Brighton's Radio Reaver, 97.2 FM, online at radioreaver.com and on DAB. We're the longest running and most established Albion radio show and podcast. We started in 2003 when I don't think you could even have things like a camera on a mobile phone, or let alone record voice notes on them. It seems like we've come a long way since then. But, you know, a lot has changed since then. When we first started, we were in League One, and now we're obviously pretty well established in the Premier League. And long may that continue. But anyway, I'm here to talk to you about this weekend's game against Brentford. Obviously, we travelled to your home, the Brentford Community Stadium, on Friday night, and we're very much looking forward to getting back up there. Obviously, a place where we won last season. Last season was a success for us. We had our highest ever finish in the top flight, finishing ninth. Our previous best before that was 13th. So that was something which we're certainly very, very proud of, but certainly not resting on. And hopefully we can improve on that. But the end to last season was particularly good for us, which we were very, very pleased about. I mean, we had a run of six defeats on the spin, which we arrested with a 0-0 draw against Norwich. And I remember saying on our show at the time, I said, but going into it before Norwich, that we're more likely to beat Arsenal than we would get anything out of rock bottom Norwich, which has turned out to be true. Graham Potter changed it going into the Arsenal game. He introduced Moises Caicedo to the side for the first time. And the young 19-year-old Ecuadorian, who's muchly coveted after only like 15, 16 games for the Albion, and he's already got a $100 million price tag on his head. He was made the difference. It almost like he created this cheat code for the club, where we were no longer Brighton and XG Albion anymore. We were converting the chances that we were creating, and it was just the start of a wonderful run that saw us win at Spurs the week after that, and finish the season on a massive high. And in fact, we didn't actually want the season to finish. I mean, the last game of the season, the home win against West Ham, where we won 3-0. You know, it was a carnival atmosphere at the ground. We were just absolutely thrilled. And couldn't wait to get the season started. And the season started really well. And, you know, then we got to the 5-2 victory over Leicester. And, well, the sky fell in. It was just absolutely devastating to lose Graham Potter, and to lose him when we did and to the club heat we did, it's just a complete kick in the unmentionables. It's and the fact that he took the, we knew he would take his backroom team of Bjorn Hamburg and the other one with him. They've been gone. They're dead to us. We knew that he would take them, but the fact that he took Bruno and Ben Roberts as well, Billy Reid is the other one. The fact he took Bruno and Ben Roberts as well is, that was, I mean, Bruno is a club legend. Ben Roberts, probably the greatest goalkeeping coach in the country. You know, that was a real kicker. And it left us feeling just completely deflated. Obviously, we've brought in a new man. Roberto De Zerbi has taken over from Graham. And his first game in charge was after it felt like 6 years of not playing football. It felt like the game at Anfield felt like the first game of the season after a month of not playing. And that one, it started well, going 2-0 up at Anfield with two brilliant goals from Leandro Trossard. And then eventually coming back from 3-2 down to snatch the draw and probably should have won. It was a remarkable game, and the start of the De Zerbi era was an excellent one. And then that was followed up by defeat to Spurs at the weekend, which was a game where everything was just nearly right. It just didn't quite happen for us. And then Harry Kane popped up with his customary goal against us, and we came away with nothing. Where, I mean, I think a draw would have probably been a fair result. I mean, Spurs didn't really create anything else other than that. But Graham Potter, we are going to miss him. He brought so much more to the party. His intelligence and just the way he was around the club. And you just felt that he was on the cusp of something really, really special when he went to Chelsea. And just seeing him do interviews for Chelsea at the moment, it just feels a little bit dirty. It just feels a little bit sordid. It's like seeing your ex-girlfriend with somebody else. It's just like, you're kind of drawn to it and you hate it at the same time. And I just really wish that he could have stuck around at least until the end of the season. But, you know, good luck. Well, I say good luck to him. It's Chelsea, isn't it? So I don't really mean it. Going into this game, obviously we lost at the weekend, you lost at the weekend. You know, it was a little bit of a blip. We've going into it on the back of the absolutely awful news that we've lost Enoch Mwepu. Now, Enoch is a player that we absolutely loved. He only played 25 times for us, but his just infectious smile, the way he was around the place, the fact that the Zambians started following us, and the magnificent Malangwa Zombe, the poet Zombe, whose prose every time Enoch did something amazing in a game, it just makes everyone smile. And the fact that he's had to retire at the tender age of 24 after having an incident, he was away on international duty in Zambia and got hospitalised. We didn't really know too much about what was going on in regards to that. And then it was announced on Monday that they found a hereditary heart condition. And it's time for him to stop playing. It was too dangerous for him to continue playing. We've all seen issues. I mean, obviously, you had Christian Eriksen come back from his heart condition and very nearly dying on a football pitch, which could have happened to Enoch if he'd have continued playing. So it's just absolutely devastating for him, and we just wish him all the very, very best for whatever he does next, because the guy is just the nicest guy. I mean, we've interviewed him on our show, and he is just, his story about how he got to be where he was in the first place is just inspirational. And Yeah, we're just a little bit devastated about it. In fact, he had this pass called the Ninkumona pass. He did an ICU. He playing passes without knowing because you just knew where somebody was, which if you probably won't want to remember it. But the Leandro Trossard's second goal against you on Boxing Day was created by Enoch by this is absolutely wonderful ball that he just Leandro just finished on the volley. So, how do we feel about the rest of the season? Well, we've got to be optimistic. We still don't know exactly what the Zerbi ball is, but it was courted by many a club across Europe. In fact, when he was appointed as Brighton manager, there were Juventus fans were going absolutely ballistic, thinking that he should have been going to the Juve. They wanted him there, and they wanted him across Europe's top clubs. So the fact that we've got him, we're absolutely delighted. But what can he bring? Well, he's already bringing up some interesting things about Solly March. Leandro Trossard scored a hat-trick at Anfield. But, you know, he doesn't need to change too much. We're pointed him from a position of strength because normally when you're replacing a manager, it's because you're rubbish. We certainly weren't rubbish. And hopefully we can continue our improvement and finish as high up the table as possible. We've got players in our squad that are just getting better and better. I've mentioned Moise Caicedo. We've got Alexis McAllister, Leandro Trossard. These are players which are coveted by other clubs. And hopefully we can do everything to hang on to him. But we go into the game against Brentford. We're confident. Won there last year. Let's hope that the Albion... Well, let's hope that myself and Billy there can meet up for a beer after the game. But it's going to be the Brighton fans that are going to be celebrating. We'll see you then. Great, best of luck for the rest of the season after this one. And obviously when we play you at the Amex. But we'll see you soon. And thanks for listening. Bye.
So there you go. Adie Packham from Albion Raw. Good guy, Adie. Every year we have a good old chinwag, a good old chat. We were trying to catch up with them before our last game with them. But that unfortunately was on Boxing Day, which made everything really, really difficult. You know, I mean, it was all right for me because I was staying down in Brighton for Christmas. But for you lot, you had to try and get down to Brighton and you had to stay over. And it was just a nightmare, you know, trying to do anything. And then we got beaten as well, which didn't really help things. And Brighton actually beat us twice last season. The first game, they didn't deserve, I'm going to say straight up, they didn't deserve to beat us at all, you know, but we just didn't put our chances away. It was our first defeat of the season and Trossard scored a great goal on 90th minute, which actually kind of knocked the stuffing out of us, I think, because we weren't expecting that because we had such a great start to the season. Then we went down to Brighton and on Boxing Day and we were pretty rubbish, to be honest with you. And it was one of those days where it just was not great. And then you go back and we try to get a drink and we couldn't get a drink afterwards because it was Boxing Day and it was just a bit rubbish, really. But Brighton, you know, Laney, we need to get back on track, don't we?
We do. Stating the bleeding obvious, I know, but it's 100% true. They provide us with a good opportunity to do that, I'd say. They play football our kind of way. They're having a really good season. They've been way more consistent than us so far. But it will change for them as well. I can't see them keeping up this pace for the duration. They are going to dip at some stage because they're that kind of team. They've got that kind of squad. They can't, you know, I don't think they're still equipped to compete in that top sort of 5-6 for the 9 months. So they are going to drop points and we've got to make sure that the points they drop start this Friday night. And I think, you know, we all get excited about our new stadium and the atmosphere under the lights on Friday night. It's something it works massively in our favour. And we've got to use that big noise. So, get down the pubs really early. Have an extra pint before the game and get your vocal cords lubricated because, you know, if the game goes, our way, then, you know, getting behind them will add another dimension to what we already know we're capable of. We do need to go out there and stamp our brand of football back on on a game. We haven't seen that. We were a shadow of ourselves against Arsenal. We've talked about Newcastle, and we were pretty flat down in Bournemouth as well. So, you know, we although we did score a goal on Saturday up in the northeast, it was a penalty. We need open play goals made possible through big creative chances. So, you know, and Bumo needs to get back on his A game. And one or two others that have kind of fallen a little bit backwards, I'd say, in recent weeks. They need to kind of get on the front foot again. So yeah, we need our players to go out there and stamp their quality on the game again.
Yeah, I mean, Brighton, you know, again, similar to us, and we talk about this all the time because their owner, in the same business as our owner, you know, they're in business together, and they base their whole club on very much like what we do on statistics. You know, they keep it a little bit more quiet than what they do, so they're keeping it down low, but we know they do exactly the same thing. They buy their players in the same way, they scout their players, they do all the stats in the same way. Their owner's got a lot of money, actually, so they invest higher than what they have, but very, very similar. So we know that they're going to create high quality chances. As you see, Brighton take a lot of high quality chances, but they didn't put the ball in the back of the net. Very similar to us as well. And that was why a lot of, in particular, Crystal Palace fans used to always have a go at Graham Potter, going, oh, everyone's going, he's a brilliant manager, but what has he done? You know, they can't score. But it's just kind of like the football is there. You know, if he had, you know, Haaland, then he'd put, you know, they'd be scoring 8 goals a game, 9 goals a game, but they haven't got that type of player. And if, as long as you're creating those chances, if you've got a player that can put them in the back of the net, you know, regularly, then you're laughing. So they haven't done, but that's always a danger for us as well. Plus you've got the players who could score from, you know, 20, 25 yards as well, which just is a big nightmare for us. But, you know, what are they good at? Brighton are good at shooting from direct free kicks, creating scoring chances and defending set pieces. Where they're weak is in the air and also avoiding individual errors. They like to control the game in our half. They like the through balls. They pretty much keep the same first 11. They like to play the offside trap, and they're not very aggressive, you know. And you know, and sort of playing against us, what people say, we like long shots. We've got skillful players. You know, we're good at coming back from losing positions. We like to create scoring chances. You know, we like to attack set pieces. We're good in the air. You know, we're good at protecting the lead. We're always offside, you know. We're not great at defending against long shots. We know that. We're not great at defending against skillful players and also avoiding individual errors, you know. So, you know, that is the two styles that we're looking at. Now, Laney, I mean, what I'm going to ask you first of all is team-wise, because, you know, there's one player, we talked about him and we love him, you know, but he's still not 100% on his A game. You know, Josh De Silva, he came off at half-time. Yanel wasn't playing, which was a big question mark to people. They're like, this is interesting. Why is Yanel out? Is he injured? But I think it was a tactical decision that Thomas Frank made against Newcastle. Maybe he thought that he's going to make it, we'll creatively be able to outplay Newcastle. You know, we'll have the ball and we'll play it around them. And that really didn't work. So we had to change it up at halftime. So Saturday or Friday against Brighton, how do you see it going with the team? Do you think, you know, De Silva in, you get Yanel in, it's going to be Damsgaard, Baptiste, you know, it's all about that midfield, because we need to get that midfield right.
We do. You know, it's a big question mark over Josh De Silva. It's a fact, you know, we're fully behind him. He had a brilliant start to the season, scored in the first two games. He needs to step it up if he's going to get, you know, guaranteed starts. You know, like, obviously there's a, you know, there's an argument to say that you take him to one side and you explain that to him, and you hopefully that is the G up that means he goes out and has a great, great game on Friday night. You know, he's got that in his locker. We need to see more of that. Equally, Damsgaard, you know, how is he 90 minutes fit yet? You know, there was talk about him being underweight when we signed him. Is he at his optimum weight yet? Again, questions that we can't answer because we haven't got that data. And you know, there was talk about, I read a kind of one of those, I don't know if it's a clickbait story or whether it was a, you know, there was actually truth in this, but whether, you know, the team that we bought Damsgaard from, who was it again? Sorry, it was Sampdoria. So do I. They're concerned that he's not getting enough minutes to guarantee the assists and the goals that they get an extra payout for this season. I just don't think he's quite there yet. I mean, we obviously got massive expectations because we want him to be that Eriksen replacement. But I just got a feeling he's still probably a few weeks away. He might actually take him to go away with Denmark for the World Cup and then come back, and then maybe we'll see the real Dam's God second part of this season. So, the midfield, I personally go with Yanel. You know, he rarely, I mean, I know he's not a lot of things. He's certainly not creative, but we do need to get the centre more solid, because Newcastle controlled the middle there, and you know, Jensen had so much, well, too much to do all on his own. So, you know, we do need another big game from him. So, you know, get behind him on Friday night. Jensen needs to be, up to how he's been playing for the rest of the season so far, in my opinion.
Yeah. And Brighton, obviously, they're coming down here, you know, decent side, new manager in tow, as AD's talked about. They've got a number of, they've got some really good, they've got some great players. And like I said to you, they're not necessarily household names, but obviously, it's probably sort of quite similar to us, where they'll play together and they'll play together as a team as well. They've lost a couple of players as well. They've lost, was it Bissouma to Tottenham? Which again, AD talked about, and I thought when Bissouma came last season, he was a great player. So, in a way, that's a big loss for them, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, they're as near to Brentford as you're ever going to get as a kind of a comparison, because they've got a few more years on us. You know, they've been consistently in this division for 6 or 7 years now, isn't it? So, we know that the riches that staying in this division it brings you. And I know they sold Chicharria to Chelsea as well. They've lost players, but they've got massive fees for them, and that's the case will be if and when we lose our star players, which will happen at some stage. But we're confident in the knowledge that if they do go, there's going to be a huge transfer fee that comes in, which allows you then to kind of replenish. So fair play to Brighton. They've done an incredible job in staying here, and they're competing at the top. As I said earlier, I don't think they're going to stay there. I think they will drop away to some degree, but it's already an excellent season, which is shaping up to be one. So, we have to go out there and put our marker in the sand. We're on our day, we're every bit as good as them, and we have to come out at the end of what I think is going to be a hugely entertaining game with 3 points.
Yeah, and McAllister, they got Trossard, who caused us problems last season as well. Danny Welbeck, who we all know about as well, And interestingly, we talked about Lallana as well for Southampton, and he's now actually in the Brighton team. But also, they've had sort of a little bit of sad news as well, because they've also got Mwepu, who very young, he's only 24, I think he is, and he has had to retire from football because of a hereditary heart condition that he's got, and he's told that he had to retire from football. And obviously that's something that's quite close to our heart, because obviously we have the situation obviously with Andy Scott, who had to retire from football for very similar reasons. Also, we had Rob Rowan as well, who died from a hereditary heart condition as well. So I think the Brighton fans are trying to see if they can get a recognition for Mwepu in a particular minute. I think it might be something like the 8th minute or something like that, which is the number on his shirt. These things are quite difficult to try and get going if you don't put it on the big screen. But again, that is something we have a solidarity with, because obviously the heart issues and being aware of heart issues and people take care of that is a big issue in and around Brentford and Brentford fans, isn't it, Lainey?
Yes, it is. And it was last week where at Brentford Football Club they announced that they were going to kind of encourage a screening of the fans, and encouraging or signposting people to how to go and get themselves checked out, and to kind of spot or identify any underlying issues. And as you rightly say, you know, we've got Rob Rowan and Andy Scott, and obviously, you know, Christian Eriksen's being in and around our club. So yeah, it's something that the club are already promoting, you know, awareness of heart conditions. So yeah, I fully support and hope that they can get something sorted out for Friday to kind of recognise tragic news about a player having to give up his career.
Right. Okay. So listen, let us just return to the match itself. And Laney, I'm going to ask you for a score prediction. I'll just say, by the way, none of us got the Newcastle score prediction right. We shall move on. Score prediction for the Brighton game.
2-1 Brentford.
I'm going to go 3-1 Brentford.
Okay.
So there you go. So listen, this is the Bespoke Pride of West London podcast. Friday night, we'll be in the Globe. We'll be having a right laugh inside the Globe. We'll be keeping our fingers crossed that after
early start, early start, Mr. Grunt.
Let's see how it goes. You know. And I've got an early start Saturday morning, but let's see how it goes. But anyway, like I said, don't forget to subscribe to us on all good podcast channels, and also write us a lovely review. Don't forget to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Also, if you want to subscribe to Besotted Global, which is our little social media community, besotted.com/global. Other than that, all I could say is Friday night under the lights, it's going to be great. Fingers crossed, bees are going to get back on track. I'm Billy Gree in the house. Billy G. I've got all Billy sorts G. of different names going on. Like I was saying, as I'm a B with Brentford, and I'm G in the DJ name and all like that. But Billy Grant, the B in the house, and Laney in the house.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you too, and we shall see you Friday night. And that's why we're going to have a stream.
Come on, you bees.
Come on, you bees. Let's get them seagulls.
No more mistakes.
Seagulls. No
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.